There we go. Right, start again. I was grateful for the meditation. I arrived with quite a lot of stress, as I expect a number of you did as well, and so that's been a real gift for me tonight. My name is Kay Goldsworthy. I'm an Anglican. Some of you will perhaps have that in your history somewhere as part of your story. Some of you may have another Christian denomination as part of an earlier story in your life, and that may or may not be a remembrance of joy for you. But I hope that that as I'm with you tonight, there is no sense that that this is an unhappy moment, as it were, that that there is kindness for you in this space. I've been invited, and as she was saying, that this is a series where you've been considering stories and people have been telling something of their own story. And so that's what I've been invited to do. So a bit of it's fairly pedestrian, as is the case with the story that we are and we live for all of us. So I'm an Australian-born woman. I grew up in Melbourne. I was the youngest of three children. And I, like many people of my own kind of place and age, was sent off to church as a child in order to, as it were, learn those good things of faith, as my family understood that. And then when I was a little older, I was sent off to another ritual rite of passage, which confirmation, some of you may have been in that space as well. And as a 13-year-old, that was quite a step, because it was a step of making another and deeper commitment into a faith that was for me not something that I really, of course I didn't understand deeply, I was young, but a faith which I understood something of the heart of, even at that young age, and so gave myself to it quite wholeheartedly. There was some challenge in it for me, but giving myself into that at that kind of young age meant that it grew and I grew with it. And I was really fortunate because the people who were around about me in that space were people with a broad perspective and generous hearts, and people who were able to hold what it was that that I might have brought as a questing and questioning teenager. Within that space, it was a gift for me that I was taken seriously. And I think that in the life of faith is a gift for everyone. That the sense that the who you are matters, and the who you are is taken seriously within the broad faith community or faith story that you are exploring or that holds you. When I was 16, I made an inquiry about being in ministry and service, but I was told I was a little bit young and I should go away and go to university and then come back. Well, I didn't go to university at all. And I went away, went away for a number of years, not so much from faith, but from some of the institutionalising of it, which wasn't quite at that point working for me. And I came back in my early 20s after a stint of working and a stint of exploration. came back because there was for me in the heart of this faith something which I found sturdy and trustworthy and true. And that was about that as a human person, dignity and worth were a gift. They were not something that I had to earn. They were not something which in any way were mine except by a gift. And that gift gave me into a perspective of what I'm God as hospitality, the place of welcome. And so that story, that narrative, that theology of hospitality has held me and nurtured me and encouraged me and been a way in which I have tried to also respond and live out the faith that I have. A hospitality which says, because you are, you have dignity. Because you are of value. Because you are, not because of what you are or what you achieve or who you are or what you have done. Because you are. That was a huge challenge to live and to live out in response to others, which you know, frankly, I do with a limited degree of success, but that is an aspiration for me. The valuing of human beings because we are, and that for me was reflective of the God in whom I was able to believe. That was a part of the story of God, which made that real for me, makes the faith for me come alive, be lively, and be worthwhile, be worth everything, really, because I've given my life into that, as you know, many of you have done in Buddhism, I expect. I just happened to be in a group, the first group of women in the country, as it turns out, who were part of the church at a time when there was a huge movement about the place of women within the life of the church, and I, alongside wonderful people, women and men, was part of a movement in the Anglican Church towards women taking places of leadership that we had not taken before, that had not been previously available for women. And so my story is one of being part of a wide group of people who truly saw that that within the life of organised religion, within the life of Christian faith, within the Anglican denomination, it was not only possible but good and godly to see that tradition has to, as it were, live anew in each generation in order to live. And it's part of the word itself means that something has to be betrayed in order that it can live afresh. If it never changes, it's just a habit or a pattern. But a tradition lives afresh. And so that living afresh, women walking into new places of leadership within that community, just happens to be part of where I was at the moment that it was happening. And so so that's kind of the doors that were opened for me, and that I stepped through. Christianity, of course, is a narrative faith. Its stories contain its meaning, and those stories live afresh, as good stories should. And so for me, some of the stories that I read, particularly within Gospels, are incredibly powerful. And one of those is the story of the woman who says yes. And in her saying of yes, something new was born. So that's the story of Mary, who is met by an angel, who is invited to give birth. And in the giving birth of the child, Jesus, something new is born, which holds the heart of God within it. So for me, that's a really powerful story. And her yes is incredibly powerful. And it has been part of the kind of attitude, if you like, of life. How is it that we say yes to that which has the capacity to take new life within us and to be new life for those around us? And a life which is, I keep saying good, but actually that's a biblical word, and it really means full and possible and overflowing. How is that possible? So that's been a part of an attitude that I have wanted to embody and to pursue. It isn't always easy to say yes. Surely you know that. It is not always easy to see yourself in some new way, some new space. It's not always easy to come to an understanding that in fact you are someone who is capable of saying yes to that which is new, which is presented to you, to that call, if you like. We use the language of vocation, which comes from a word to do with a voice, and that call, that sense that you have of being drawn further and further into the spiritual path, which gives shape to your life, and by which you hope others also might see a bigger story for themselves, a story where not shadowed by shame, such an easy place for us to be, but in fact offered a new grace and hospitality, a new place of welcome, and therefore a new freedom. I came to Perth in 1988, quite a long time ago now as it turns out, and worked in a school as a chaplain for a number of years, and it was a girls' school. It was lovely to be in a community for the first time in my working life in the church, where I was amongst women, girls and women in the main, not amongst men, because of course the leadership of the community I'd been in was all male at one point in time. So that was a new experience. In 1992, the first group of women in Australia were ordained as priests in the Anglican Church, and it happened here in Perth, and I happened to be part of that group as well. You know, these were quite heady times for us because our debating was very strong, and people had very strong feelings about women taking on places, roles of leadership like this, of stepping into places which had only been inhabited by men before. The week before we were set to be ordained, there was a Supreme Court challenge, and so it was not until 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the day before we were set to be ordained that the judge brought down his finding, which was that challenge was not upheld. And so there was a huge sense of celebration. It was later in that same year that the barriers in the rest of the country were, if you like, done away with, and in many places around Australia, women stepped into this same role. I don't know how it is in Buddhism. I don't know how it is in your community, but when you are involved in seeking how it is that a community shapes its life, how it is that you live together, how it is that as human beings you inhabit the space, how it is that you disagree or you find yourself in conflicts and you do that well, is a real challenge to the spirituality that I hold, and a challenge to us, I think, in my part, my denomination, my tradition, to work through how it is that that we can disagree and yet be held together. And I think that that's something that we have done, and I certainly have done, with a mixed outcome. You know, there are times when the desire to be right is somewhat stronger than my sense of how it is that I need to live with my sisters and brothers in community, that the sense of how it is that I am at peace with people who are so very different in the way that they respond to the Christian story from me is somewhat of a challenge. And the seeking again and again of a kind of spiritual place of calm and of peace, a place of wanting to do that which the teachings of my religion speak of, the quest for not only receiving, as I require it, forgiveness, but actually being gracious enough to offer it as well, especially when that's really, really hard to do, is a major challenge in the very simple teaching of a spiritual path, because effectively it is a spiritual teaching, it is a simple path, the path of loving, which empties itself and gives everything. That's the heartland of my faith, a love which gives itself away for others. That's an easy thing to say and a not so easy thing to do. In 2008, it did become possible for women to be ordained as bishops, which is really a particular place of leadership in the life of a community, and I was invited to consider whether I might take that up, and that was here in Perth again, and again that story of the woman who said yes, and so something new came to birth within her, and that thing which came to birth was the person who teaches about self-giving and about embodying love was a powerful story for me, and so I said yes, and was ordained a bishop. Quite different from being in the groups that I had been previously. I had always been alongside others when I'd stepped into something new before that. And this, for the first time, was a step I had to take alone. I was the only person being ordained at that time. And a number of people from different faith communities came to that service, which was a great blessing. Later on, I worked for 10 years, maybe not quite that long, maybe 7 years in Perth in that role. and then went away to the other side of the country, into Gippsland, to become the Bishop of Gippsland, which is a lovely part of the world, and was a huge blessing to be in, really in a quite a rural part of Australia, and to have space within that that community, really interesting space to find myself in a new place and to be able to respond to a call. In 2018, I got called back here into Perth, and my role as Archbishop means that I am the spiritual head of Anglicans in Perth, and have a particular role in Western Australia. I have some of my views, some people think, are not conservative enough, that I'm a little more what we call liberal, which is not like the religious party liberal. It's a little more less conservative than others in my understanding of the Bible and in my response to the teachings of Jesus. And that's not necessarily a straightforward place to be. And then, of course, there are those people who think I'm not quite open enough. And certainly there are people who would like me to be more perhaps generous than they feel is that I am. So it's an interesting place to be as a leader, to sit on quite a fine line, and to need to be, as a bishop is called to be, present for everyone. And that means having to learn even more more generosity within myself, which comes not because I'm the most generous human being in my church, but because there is a much bigger grace that helps to sustain me and gives me the opportunity to learn something new about the generosity with which I am met as a human being, and the generosity which somehow grows, expands within us as we allow ourselves to be open to that. We have, in the last little while, we're quite methodical in the way we read the Bible in the Anglican Church, and Sunday by Sunday we read short passages from the four Gospels, and in each year we spend time in one of those Gospels only, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John. This year is the year of Luke. And just recently we read a story of two sisters called Martha and Mary, who had their teacher and friend Jesus had come to their home. And the story, some of you will be familiar, I'm sure, remember it. The story is that Martha is busy preparing a meal, busy in the kitchen with a meal, and Mary is sitting at the teacher's feet. And Martha says to Jesus, the teacher, "Will you tell my sister to come and give me a hand here?" That, not in that language, but that's the gist of the story. And Jesus says to her, looks at her and says to her, "Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things, and Mary has chosen the better part." Now that's one of those stories in the Bible which is really tricky for a feminist and for a Christian feminist to read, because this is a sort of story which could have two women put in opposition with each other. This is a story in which we could say, well, look, just being busy isn't good enough. You've got to choose the better part, and here are two women to tell you that story. So one's not okay and one is. The reality is that within the story, the person who sits at the teacher's feet and learns is described as the one who chooses the better part. But what's so liberating in the story is that the posture which Mary, who sits at Jesus' feet, takes is the posture of a disciple, the posture of someone who comes to the teacher to learn. That was a posture only afforded to men. This is a story which says, you are allowed to take this space. You are allowed to sit in this place. In the language that story is written, the words worried and distracted have at their root two separate things. Worried has at root a sense of being strangled. And my own experience is that when I am worried, I do feel unable to kind of move. I do feel a bit bound up. I don't know if that happens for you, but worry is the thing that you just go around and around and around in the same kind of place. And distracted has within it, at its root, a sense of fragmentation. And certainly for me, when I am distracted and worried, I'm both going around and around and around, and I'm fragmented. You know, I use the language. I'm all over the place. I don't know where my head's at. You know, I use the kind of language that does this. This story offers an image around being able to be free from those things and coming to a place of learning from the teacher and being allowed to inhabit that, of being able to put away the categories that others have had for you, and being able to be liberated into a new place. So that story has had some power for me in recent times, and I don't know how you sit at the feet of teachers, how it is that you take a posture of learning, but I hope that you are liberated into it in your own way and place. I've talked for probably half an hour, and that's more than enough, I'm sure.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Archbishop Key. So if anyone has any questions, we've got some microphones over there. I think there's a gentleman.
Firstly, thank you, Archbishop, for your teaching. The intention of my question is not to be accusatory or resentful, it's genuine curiosity. My brothers and I had what could only be described as a hellfire of childhood. It was brutal. We were shuffled off to Methodist Sunday school, and then later to a Presbyterian or boys' school, so it wasn't a rollicking, good, fun start to my spiritual life. As an 8-year-old in Sunday school, I prayed to God for some relief for myself and my brothers. That relief never eventuated. As an 8-year-old, I was totally confused by that. And disappointed. I wondered how a being, a God that embodies love, couldn't comfort an 8-year-old innocent. And so from that point on, I started questioning. I later on became an atheist. But then I studied and science and practiced science. And as a scientist, I believe that you can't be an atheist. You have to be an agnostic, because you just don't know. So I remain agnostic. I'm agnostic about some aspects of Buddhism as well. So why did God ignore me? Why did God allow an 8-year-old child to suffer? I'm sorry, oh, I know that's a pointed question, but...
I think that the question of suffering is one that we know is universal, and that your particular story of suffering as a child, you know only as an adult, is one that many children have and still experience. The issue around innocent suffering is one that I think we find questioned. I find questioned in the pages of the Bible. So people questioning God about, why is it that I suffer? Where are you? And where is the relief? And you and I both know that it is often the case that that prayer is not answered in the way, or perhaps is not answered at all. It'd be stupid for me to say isn't answered in the way that you sought it to be answered. I actually think that's not quite good enough as an answer, but wasn't answered. And still somehow for you, agnostic is how you're able to describe yourself. That there is something beyond, bigger. Within that, and within your humanity, I would hope, I really do hope, that there is the possibility for you to be able to see where both the guilt and the shame should reside. Because what I do know is, it wasn't you. And human beings are not always great. I hope for a better way, a much better way, of being able to speak of that which I call God, that which is beyond, and to reflect that in the way that it's lived. I'm sure that's not going to a deal, because those things that you've merely hinted at are profound, and they touch the very, very essence of us. Zionism has clearly in some ways been, I would think, a kind of gift to you, working through and working with. So I don't know if that was church or if that was more intimate community for you. If it was the church community or a more intimate familial community, in which wasn't great, but that was not you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Archbishop. That really opened my heart too, because I was brought up as a fundamental Catholic, and yeah, my sister tried to commit suicide because it was so terrible. And yeah, there was a lot of self-hatred, but I was very, very religious. I loved Jesus so much, I wanted to show the stigmata for Jesus to suffer. And then the self-hatred was so great that I kept having car accidents, and but then what happened, I found meditation through the Anglican Church, through David Prescott. That started, and I was always interested. I was always with yoga, always. I loved the divine in the yoga and the union, the nature. And then I found the Eastern religions. And then I've come back and I realised that this self-hatred transformed to love for all religions, for all beings, for all nature. And so I am so blessed that that beginning transformed me into the universal mind of all things, of oneness. And yeah, I'm so grateful you're here tonight. Thank you.
I'm glad you found that space.
Thank you for the talk tonight.
Hello.
I'm raised Catholic too, and since I moved here to Australia, things are different about Christianity for me. And I want to ask you one question. How do you keep believing in God? I mean, like, after I learned a few things about history, I come to realizations about nonsense about God. I mean, like, I believe that everyone believes in something, spiritual things that we don't know for sure. The beginning of the life, it's science still try to find out. But like, I rise from the little kid up to now. I find it, I feel being so stupid all this time. So it's hard for me now to come back. I'm still going to church every Sunday, but it's like I'm going through the motion. Like, anchor for me for my spirituality now is to Buddhism. I'm going to church out of habit because they're the place where I feel I belong. But every Sunday on church, I'm like, how do I keep believing in this? It's a very strong conflict within me. Like when I learned about karma, that actually no one can escape from the effect of every cause from your mind, from your talk, from your action. And in Christianity, there is forgiveness of sins. Sins, which is, if we talk about that, it's also like karma, but bad karma, how I understand that. So I come to realization, this forgiveness of sin actually is nonsense. That's how, yesterday when I read it, I feel like it's very stupid for me to believe this all this time. I feel like being lied to. And now I'm struggling. How do I keep believing in God? So I still pray, but I don't believe. And I find it's really hard, because I raised Catholic. The church where I placed is the place where I go, there where I met all my friends. And all of a sudden, I feel like it's all lies. Then, especially about God. Like, but also come to realization about Buddhism, in some part of it, it's hard for me to keep it because it's like very self-responsible way. That's how I understand Buddhism. You take care of yourself, self-responsible. But we also come to understanding that ourself is very limited. We all gonna die. We don't have the power. We have somebody else. We are not that great that we are, you know, like rely on ourselves. I find it struggle also for me to rely on myself, but I find it struggle for me also to rely on God, which I believe is a little bit like illusion. So how do you, as a, in this modern age, how do you keep believing in God? I find it's really hard. I find it's really hard. So all my friends in church, like, they don't understand me, but I read the history, and I find it, I find it really hard to believe that all this time I'm being stupid. That's how I feel sometimes. But sometimes I come to Buddhism and feel like, no, this is cannot be right. I'm not that great. We shouldn't be just, we should thankful to something bigger than us. But it's hard for me to say to God. So how do you keep yourself about all of these things, like you believe in God and all of these things?
I mean there's a big journey for you in this. If you're in two kind of spaces around things, and my own experience is different from yours, obviously, and yours from mine. I do have a faith. I do believe in God. And the way that I live that and follow that and believe that is, for me, an ongoing journey. It is a continuing I would call it interior journey. You know, the travelling in about faith, traveling into the heart of the teaching of Christianity, and it is always, there is about being responsible about the way in which I do that. So I'm probably not going to be at all useful for you as you struggle this, because my wrestling and your wrestling are two separate kinds of things, I think. My wrestling is within how I understand my faith and live it, and we each as individuals have to work through the way that we find ourselves. And within Buddhism, I think that many people would possibly use the language of salvation differently, but that which has brought the peace and opportunity for living, and that in my in Christian faith is about just working that out quietly and day by day, sort of. There is a scripture which talks about doing it in fear and trembling, and I don't mean fear as in being afraid, but in that moment of wisdom when you understand that in the face of the universe, and it was actually in the meditation as we began tonight, it wasn't said like this, but this is how I heard it. In the face of the universe, we are tiny things, and yet we are here, and we are present, and we have meaning. So, I think as you are struggling with this meaning, may all goodness be with you. Are you reading the Dalai Lama and is that the South African? Yeah. So I thought that's what that was. So Desmond Tutu, that might be a book where the dialogue between the two and the conversation partners that they are in that book of joy is of use. I hope it is.
Thank you, Archbishop.
Hi.
Hello. I don't actually have a question. I have a lot inside. I can't quite verbalise it. But have you ever heard of Joel Goldsmith?
Of?
Joel Goldsmith, a Christian mystic from
long ago? No, I don't think so.
Okay. Because I think the only question... Hang on. I listen to a lot of his work, which is... God's used often a lot, all the time, and the interpretation of what God is. And I suppose what I could ask you is, how do you define God, besides that, as you said earlier, that you were talking about the integrity of just we are, is there anything more you can say that might, yeah, enlighten how your ministry defines God?
So the scripture, if you like, says God is love, and yet there are so many words for God, so many titles for God, and some of them have been used in ways that have been terribly oppressive, and some of them have been used by colonizers. We know this, we live this, we're in that, and some of them have been words that have been wonderfully, wonderfully freeing. I was out near. I go on retreat out bush about in between Southern Cross and Kalgoorlie every now and again. And I was out there and with some Aboriginal people a few weeks ago. And you know, I'm useless at working out the stars, but finally I kind of got the Southern Cross. And one of the men was saying that in his community, Christianity began to make sense when they saw that this star in the sky, which had actually been part of a story, talked about the kind of payback and the taking on those things which had been payback that other people had to carry, that had been the burdens that people had to carry. And so I love that sense of that cross sitting there as a sort of, you know, because it's a pointer, it's a guide, it says who we are. It's a whole new way of engaging with a name for God and a title, if you like. But there are so very many. And the language we use reflects something of what it is we believe. So I have some different ways in which I speak, as it were. So that language of Lord and Father and Almighty, I mean, that's very strong kind of language, and it's not always been useful. But, you know, but I think beloved and friend... And giver of grace, you know, these are other languages, and people use a wider language. I hope that answers the question to some degree, or
yes,
begins
does.
The conversation.
Yeah, thanks. I would like to say more, but I do have to go because I look after an elderly person, my mother. But I just wanted to say, it's more like you said, it's an inward journey of God, externalizing itself. Correct. That's what you're saying,
yeah,
and that's
it's
why,
a spiritual path that you live out. Yeah,
yeah, but I suppose I see that when I hear people talk about God, I feel they externalize it as something that has to help them, rather than it coming from within them. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
Anyway, I have to go. So, but thank you very, very much. Okay. And are you available to chat
at
other times? And things like that?
Mm.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Eddie has to give a comment.
Okay, yeah.
Archbishop Kay.
Hello.
Yeah, thanks for coming here to give us a talk, you know, yeah. It's not a question. This one is like to share, you know, on Buddhist God.
Share on?
On Buddhist God. In Buddhism, there is God. Mm-hmm. There's different, yeah, okay, there's God in Buddhism, yeah. If you refer to the 31 planes of existence, you know, that we have, okay, starting for all these hell realms, animals, okay, we human beings, we are on the fifth realm, human beings, okay. On the seventh realm, there's a realm called the realm of the 33 gods. There are 33 gods, okay, yeah. And then the thing is, in fact, they are not gods, they call it gods, they are like angels, you know, the three, yeah. Mm-hmm. Then higher than that, the next one is the ninth realm. There's a Tusita heaven, there's a god realm. They say that the future Buddha is coming, waiting there from that realm, the heaven realm, okay, yeah. Then 11th realm, that's the realm of Mara, he's the lord of, you know, of sensual pleasures. Then the real high Buddhist god is on the 14th plane, you know, the great Brahma. But the Buddhist, this great Brahma, he's not the creator god, all right? And below the 14th, there are ministers, they are like sons of God, you know. Okay, so in Buddhism, okay, the Buddha tell us, okay, there's this God realm, this thing, but he asks us to not rely on the high powers now, to rely on your self-insight thing now. It's like you're saying the kingdom of heaven lies within. In I can see the similarity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you work from inside the thing. Yeah. So what I'm trying to say is, yeah, if you really look closely, you know, more deeply, you know, there's a lot of similarity, you know. Similarity, you know. Yeah, I was thinking like great Brahma, he's far away, he can't help us. But in Buddhism, the devas, you know, like 6, 7, 8 planes, they can come to help practitioners if you are really sincere and you sort of you ask for the help, they can help you.
Thank you. I think I'm learning things there.
Sorry.
No. That's you were teaching me some things about Buddhism that I don't know.
It's just so sharing, okay? By saying this, I'm not trying to put down other religions, at all. That's not in me. It's just sharing.
Yep. Thank you. I appreciate that very much. Yeah. And that kingdom of heaven within.
It's similar. Kind of. But I says everything lies within this fathom long body inside us all. No?
Hello.
Hi. So I was raised a Catholic, so I'm familiar.
Sorry?
I was raised a Catholic, so I'm familiar with
ways. You need the Catholic Archbishop, you guys.
No, but I'm just curious. I'm just curious as, like, what the major differences between Anglican and Catholicism are.
Between Anglicanism and?
And Catholicism.
And Catholicism. Oh, okay. So Anglicans don't have a pope. We've a very different polity organisationally. So there is no pope. Our clergy are allowed to marry. They don't have to be celibate. And
are the teachings the same?
There are many similarities. And there are some things that would be distinct. So there would be different emphasis in that the Catholic Church teaches in its doctrine and distinct differences between the two. So really the Anglican Church came about in the 16th century. It was a split between the Catholic Church and the Catholic Church in England, and the King became, if you like, the sort of head of the Church in England, and that went through a period of, there was a period of Reformation, and that was a really significant, brought sweeping changes with it, and Anglicanism has kind of always sat in that place of having that history of a bit of reform, breaking away, but also some similarities. But there are some teachings that are very different, and there are some things that are similar.
So you still believe in Jesus Christ and
yes.
the Holy Spirit and
yep, yep. So Father. That Trinitarian formula of God as a creator and as Christ and Spirit, yes.
Mm. So is there any teachings that are very different from Catholicism that you could give an example of?
Well, I think the teaching on women being able to be priests is very different. So that's certainly not not allowed in the Catholic Church. You know, we don't have a Vatican. Teachings, I mean, the official teachings of the Catholic Church to do with moral issues like, I guess, like, birth control and some of those sorts of issues. I mean, yep, they're teaching on things like divorce and remarriage. I mean, I think there's a bit of a breach between the teaching and the practice in some ways, but that's, and I can't really speak for the Catholic Church because I'm not part of the Catholic Church. Yeah.
No worries. I was just curious. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Archbishop. I think we kept you long enough on a Friday night. I was really inspired by your talk. Thank you so much. I think, yeah, that there's a lot of similarities between sort of the teachings here and like the warmth and the kindness and the compassion you extend. So thank you very much once
You're
again
welcome.
For your time. And we hope we can invite you again soon.
Thank you, Anusha.
Thank
That's
you.
Very kind of you.
Thank you.
I really appreciate your welcome and the grace that you've given, like 9 o'clock still here, and and that's really lovely of you. I'm really aware that that Buddhism, I think meditation has been a space in which people for whom organized Christian religion, that when that has not been a good space, this kind of space has been healing and welcoming and a place where people have been able to reconnect, if you like. And I'm very aware of that and very aware of the things that have come to light in the last few years through those issues in the Royal Commission. And that has just been absolutely, absolutely shocking. And it should never, ever, ever have been part of the story of a religion that speaks of its heart as love. But there it is, it has been. And so I am aware that wherever I go, I meet people who may well have been hurt, worse than hurt, in some way through the actions of somebody who is part of a church. Of their history. So I hope that my presence has not for you been too painful if you are one of those people. And I do want to say that, I mean, I can't speak for any other church but my own, but I am so very sorry if that has ever been your experience. Okay, thanks.